And now, from studios on the campus of the University of Common Sense in the Big Easy, the professor of thinkology and a man dedicated to truth and common sense. America, class is in session right here, right now, with your host, Jim Brown.
Hey, thanks for joining us at the second hour of our show today here, making some common sense out of the news. I hope you were able to listen to that last segment because I spent some time reviewing what happened after Hurricane Katrina 13 years ago, this devastating hurricane, man-made disaster because of the levees collapsing, and what happens when a basic civilian society that's operating within the norm, everything breaks down and how you respond to it. I gave you some of my personal anecdotes of evacuating people. People and all the things that my family and so many of us went through. Now, just out, the issue is back on the front burner in terms of preparedness. A new book out called 5 Days Memorial. Dr. Sherry Fink, who won the Pulitzer Prize for earlier work, has written this compelling book about life and death in a storm-ravaged hospital. Memorial is a major hospital in New Orleans, but there are lessons way beyond. We're here talking about medical ethics that affect all of us, all over the country, and also the complexities that you find when you've got civilian law trying to be applied in a war zone, which is what you found in Katrina. Got Dr. Fink with me right now. Sherry, glad you joined us here on the Common Sense Show.
I'm really pleased to be with you. Thank you.
Now, your book is first of all, let me ask you this. Your book is shooting the top of the bestseller list. It has been receiving nothing but accolades on a number of shows. It's kind of required reading where people are going to use it as book club fodder. And so it's really taken off in a dramatic way. Now, you've been a journalist for some time. Are you surprised at the huge success of 5 Days Memorial?
Yeah, my first book was, didn't receive such attention, and that was about a very dramatic situation as well in a hospital, but a hospital in Bosnia during wartime. So, yeah, I'm actually really pleased about it just because I wrote it. I have passion for the subject. I'm a physician by training, and I had worked in a lot of disaster and conflict zones and volunteered in Louisiana after Katrina, and I just felt like these are really, really urgent lessons for us to learn from, and this horrific situation that the people at this particular hospital underwent, and really the best way to honor the sacrifices and is to really, study what happened and learn from it. And it's just an amazing story and a horrific one. And so I'm really glad that people are reading it and talking about it and going forward with, some lessons from it.
Well, and I think you summed it up well. You've got a great background to look at this, having dealt with war zones and looking at these complications. But I think I said that earlier that, we're trying to look at the deaths, some 45 people dying here in this hospital, and some major investigations as to whether drugs were injected to induce these deaths because of the trauma and the situation. I reviewed the fact that the generators are flooded out and the temperature was through the roof, and we went through all that in that last segment. But basically, it presents an interesting question to us about taking what we think is the norm of civil law and applying it to a war zone. And I think what your book was compellingly telling us was this really was a war zone, wasn't it?
Well, I think that certainly some of the people in the book who are people who withstood this or who were asked, for example, the prosecutor, the local assistant district attorney who was asked to see about bringing some of the people to justice who had been allegedly involved in hastening the deaths of patients. And that's how he said it to me. He said, I felt like I was trying to apply civilian law to a war zone. But, of course, we have laws in wartime, and we have doctors and nurses who work in wartime. And so really, this actually wasn't a war zone. And I think one of the really, really hard things to keep in mind when disaster strikes is that, that there will be a tomorrow, and that we go forward as a society with what happens during a disaster. And, you know, keeping your eye on the fact that they're of the larger picture is really, really hard to do when you're exhausted and stressed and scared. But in fact, this wasn't a war zone. There weren't, you know, they weren't being bombed like the first hospital I wrote about. So there were some differences, but to the people in the hospital who had never been, you know, prepared for something like this, but not through any fault of their own, it felt that way. It felt like something totally different. And as we know, doctors and nurses, they train, they want to help people. That's why they go into the field. And to suddenly lose power, like you explained, our hospitals just rely on that so much. So they lost the tools that they were used to be able to care for people. And that was very hard for them. And some of them panicked, and some of them were very desperate and felt horrible about, you know, the conditions of the patients that they were looking at.
You raised the question about, and you talked about this was not a war zone and there were laws, but your book also raises questions about ethical rules, that there's a code of ethics that doctors live by, and maybe that sometimes the law applies, sometimes it doesn't. But I guess, and you've raised this question about the fact that emergencies, and this was certainly a massive emergency, sometimes it makes it necessary to break the ethical rules of which you set your standards to operate by. Talk about that conflict a little bit, about how you explored that during the book.
Yeah, I think that's really one of the fundamental questions of the book, really. And one bioethicist, he kind of phrased it that way. He's a specialist in end-of-life care and bioethics. And he said, you know, do we want emergencies to be times where we say, you know, like you just said, like we can let some of the rules slide because the conditions and the context are so extreme? Or is it the case that an emergency is a time when we need to really hold on very tight to those ethical standards, because that's what's going to get us through in a way that we're going to feel good about the choices that we made at the end? And his opinion was that it almost always should be the latter. And, you know, we saw a very analogous situation with the police in New Orleans, who were accused, some of them, after the disaster, shot unarmed civilians. And, you know, some of them went to jail for a little while. And the question was, you know, there was a big division of opinion in New Orleans, as you know, over whether the extreme conditions should excuse their actions, which at a normal time would have violated, you know, the standards. And of course, there was a cover-up, too, allegedly. So, and those police were recently, I understand, got out of jail because of some shenanigans with the prosecutor's office, and they're being retried. But it's a very analogous question. Should, you know, if doctors choose to hasten the deaths of their patients intentionally, if they do, and some of them told me that that is what they did, should they be held accountable, or should they be excused because of the context? And, you know, more importantly to me, rather than pointing the finger at individuals who really, I think, you know, we're trying to do their best at a very difficult time, but what do we want to take away from this? What do we want to see done in the next disaster and the one after that? And I think, you know, some of the major medical organizations have come out and said, no, you know, in a critical crisis, even in a critical crisis, we don't want to see doctors taking the role of hastening the deaths of their patients, because that could lead us to very dangerous places. And indeed, in this case, we saw some patients die who, you know, experts and their own doctors and nurses who cared for them thought were not on the verge of death and had a chance to survive. And so that's kind of the danger of going down that route. So it's not really about judging individuals so much as what do we take from this, what do we learn from this, and going forward.
And Sherry, can I just stop you right there? Got to take a little mandatory break. We're talking to Dr. Sherry Fink. Fascinating book called 5 Days Memorial. You can find it on our website at www.jimbrownusa.com. It's getting accolades all over the country. It's about a hospital in complete chaos and people that were probably put to death in their waning hours of living during the huge crisis of Hurricane Katrina. Fascinating book. We'll come back and talk to Dr. Sherry Fink a little bit longer right after this message. Freshen up your coffee, and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Jim Brown's Common Sense. right here on the Genesis Communications Radio Network at GCNLive.com.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full-color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
To thank you for being a loyal listener, we have a limited-time freebie offer for you. Claim your free heirloom tomato seeds, just pay shipping, right now at 123freeseeds.com. These aren't ordinary seeds. These are heirloom, non-genetically modified super seeds that are open-pollinated and can be grown, harvested, and replanted endlessly. These survival seeds are actually more valuable than gold in a crisis. Go to 123freeseeds.com and you can get an airtight storage packet of 150 super seeds free while supplies last to say thank you for being a loyal listener. First come, first served. Just cover shipping. Go to 123freeseeds.com now to see if your free heirloom seeds are still available. That's 123freeseeds.com.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. UtopiaSilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now UtopiaSilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details and your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Jim Brown's Common Sense. Now, here's your host and professor of Thinkology, Jim Brown.
We're talking with Pulitzer Prize winner and winner of a number of awards, Dr. Sherry Fink, about her fascinating new book called 5 Days at Memorial, the tragic story of the hospital and the disaster of people dying during Hurricane Katrina. And by the way, Sherry, I'm looking at a picture that was in the New Orleans Times-Picayune a couple of days ago. It shows 10 different people carrying a patient on a stretcher, and it looks like they're going up like a 90-degree angle, going up maybe 2 200 steps to get to a helicopter. It had to take an hour to get up that ramp for one patient, just showing the difficulties. And also in the picture, you look down below on the ground, and you can see probably 7 or 8 feet of water covering the entire city as these people struggle to get people in the helicopters. Really a very, very compelling photograph. But, Sherry, let me ask you this. Jason Berry, who's a good friend of mine, wrote in the New York Times about your book. He said this approach about how you wrote this about Memorial is a literary gamble demanding more of the reader than standard issue medical thriller would. And there's a lot of medical thrillers out there that kind of keep you on the edge, but the pretty simple issue involved. This is a complicated story. Tell me how you approach that. You want to make it clear, which you've done a marvelous job of doing, but you had so many facts and details at your disposal. How did you keep the focus so that the reader had a couple of these basic themes we've talked about so far?
So the first, well, thanks for pointing out that picture, because that really, and in the end papers of 5 days at Memorial, there's a two-page thread of just like the water surrounding the hospital, and if you look carefully, you can see that helipad. But yes, to move each patient when the elevator's cut out with the electricity, and so it just took so much time, and it was hot, and so much effort. So, you know, each individual life that was saved was a great effort by the staff, by volunteers, their family members, et cetera. And that's really important to keep in mind. And so to tell this story, the very first half of 5 days at Memorial really tries to recreate almost hour by hour what that experience was like. And so it's a narrative reconstruction based on, you know, many years of interviews and collection of documents. And I just tried to keep the timeline going forward, and then you kind of float between the perspectives. So there's a few key individuals, and you kind of walk through their shoes based on interviews that I did with them, and they kind of recreate what it was like to be faced with, you know, the various challenges. And the first one being, you know that your hospital is 3 feet below flood level. There's a flood coming. And by the way, our electrical circuits are in the basement, which I should say is a problem in hospitals around the country. And we saw that with Hurricane Sandy. So this is not an isolated event. This could happen in a lot of places where the power could be knocked out. And so the first ethical decision, you know, who do we save first when we don't have, when we know that the helicopters can take one or two people, but we've got 242 patients and we've got 2,000 people in this facility plus pets. And then the second ethical conundrum that they come to when they decide that the sickest will go last instead of first is, you know, after several days and the rescue not coming quickly enough and it being hot and medical care not being provided once the power is knocked out, really not much medical care, then what do we do with the people who are the very sickest? And, you know, how do we get out as the healthy people and, you know, care for these people who can't help themselves? And so that's the second conundrum. And then the whole second half of the book, like you said, is this whole question of how do you apply justice in this context? And, you know, is it right? Should people be brought to some sort of justice for these events? And of course, the whole challenge of the investigators, it's really told a lot through the eyes of the prosecutors and investigators who were trying to piece together what really happened when a lot of the health professionals themselves had sworn to a code of silence about it. They came out and said, we won't discuss this. And of course, their lives were at risk, you know, if the truth came out. And we saw some of them got arrested and accused of murder. So the whole second half is more like, equivalent, I guess, to a legal kind of thriller. I think Mr. Berry wrote something like that. But and so these two halves, and then the very epilogue takes you all the way up to today. And what have we learned with disasters up until this day?
If I can, since we live here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is the home of Dr. Anna Poe, Dr. Poe was probably if not the most significant, one of the two or three most significant figures to your whole book. You profiled her well. You talked to friends. You analyzed her character. Anna Poe, is she a hero? Did she make some miscues? What's your summation of Dr. Poe? And I would tell you she is extremely well thought of in this community where she lives here today. But looking at the thing objectively, what did you conclude about Dr. Anna Poe?
Dr. Anna Poe is a human being, and I wouldn't characterize her as anything. I really want the reader to read and come to his or her own conclusions. And, you know, the facts are there that she worked incredibly hard during this disaster, and she has said, you know, since the grand jury process is over, that she did inject patients, and she's given her explanation of that. People who worked with her at the hospital have said what their view was and what she communicated to them. And I think, you know, sometimes those two accounts are at odds, and the responsible journalistic thing is to really, try to the very best I could portray the various perspectives on this. And I think just try to be really, really fair. And I don't feel like the book is really aimed at kind of this question of whether she's a hero or not, or a villain or not, or should go to jail or not. You know, that to me is less interesting than the question of what can we learn from what happened, and how can we prevent this situation from happening again, where people are in such a desperate circumstance that some doctor said to me, you know, I felt like hastening the deaths of my patients was the right thing to do. You know, she has not said that she intentionally did that, but some of the people who worked side by side with her have said that that was their own motivation. And so, you know, how can we avoid getting into a situation where it is this desperate, and what can we do to ensure that, I mean, the very sad thing is that I think a lot of people thought that the family members of the people who died would say, thank God you kept my loved one comfortable until he or she died. And of course, all through the disaster, that was being done, and doctors were giving small doses of medicines for comfort. But this sort of massive effort to inject patients and the large number of patients that died all at one time on Thursday, September 1st, you know, their loved ones ended up feeling not happy about that, and saying, you know, even if mom or dad had only a week to live, or, you know, a month to live, that meant something to me.
Oh,
and so,
right,
you know, they ended up feeling very bad about that. And some of them were there.
And Sherry, I don't want to cut you off, but I've got to go to a mandatory break. I want to tell our listeners again, fascinating book. You've got one Pulitzer. This is probably your second Pulitzer. It should be, Sherry. 5 days memorial, the tragic deaths that took place in New Orleans. Sherry, thanks for spending some time with us today. I can't recommend more strongly your book, and I wish you every success and hope you'll come back again in the future.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Again, the book is on my website at www.jimbrownusa.com. Right back.
Common Sense, right here on the Genesis Communications Radio Network at GCNLive.com.
Are you a homeowner? Is your basement or crawl space damp and musty? Is your indoor air stagnant and stale? Listen up. This is the occasion contractor, Michael King. I've been telling you for a while now, hey, I got the solution. That's right, Easy Breeze Ventilation. Easy Breeze dramatically improves your indoor air by replacing contaminated air with fresh air. Easy Breeze also removes damaging moisture from your home, basement, or crawl space, reducing the chance for toxic mold to grow. Easy Breeze is the affordable way to protect your home and your health. You see, the best part, it only costs us pennies a day to operate. Unlike a costly dehumidifier, maintenance-free, and a 10-year warranty. A 10-year warranty! This is a no-brainer. Start protecting your home and your health right now. Call the professionals at Easy Breathe, easybreathe.com, 1-866-822-7328. That's 866-822-7328. Easybreathe.com. Let Easy Breathe exhale so you can inhale.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy viruses. byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
An e-cig revolution is sweeping across the country. But is yours American-made? Vapriate e-liquid by LaCig is. Manufactured in Arkansas with 100% USA-sourced ingredients. And when you buy American, you support local jobs. Vapriate e-liquid by LaCig is top quality at an affordable price. The very principle that once drove the American economy. Get great taste with no ash, tar, or smoke. You'll be wondering why you didn't make the change to Vapriate e-liquid by LaCig a long time ago. LaCig.com has everything you need, for beginners to the advanced vaping enthusiast, with a wide variety of hardware and also imported e-liquid flavors as well. Plus, LaCig smokes the competition with fast, free, same-day shipping, real people customer service, and a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. Support our country and become a Vapriate at LaCig.com or call 870-525-1440, 870-525-1440. LaCig e-cigarettes, for today's modern smoker.
What if you had a witness everywhere you drive? Now you can with video-cam.com. From truckers to motorcyclists, the handy video dash cam can be used for insurance claims, accidents, police encounters, road rage, or natural disasters. Has instant screen playback and optional night vision. Get the best quality, affordable HD dash cameras available at video-cam.com. That's video-cam.com. Or call 855-855-2022. Always have a witness with video dash cam.
So, you've decided to get prepared. You're not sure that a case of ramen and a couple of granola bars under your bed will cut it as long-term food storage anymore. You're in luck. At Emergency Essentials, we have all the resources to get you started. From three-day emergency bug-out bags to year supplies of food and everything in between. Call Emergency Essentials at 800-999-1863 or visit BePrepared.com. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to Jim Brown's Common Sense. Now, here's your host and professor of Thinkology, Jim Brown.
There's so much turmoil going on in our country today, both internally, as we've seen with the shutdown of the government, but also externally as we come to grips with how we get along with the Russians and Iran and the Chinese. And it seems like we've been parring almost with the sword with some of these supposed friends one year, enemies the next. It seems like we've been doing this for some time. But how far back does this go? You know, we deal with bullies and villains and we've got a long record of dealing with some of the same folks. Has this undermined the Americans' right to define itself? Has this undermined our character? Interesting new book out called American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. It's by Diana West, who's a prolific writer, won a number of awards, been on all kinds of talk shows. Diana, glad to have you on the Common Sense Show today.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
I thought it was interesting. You know, we kind of look at the immediacy of present-day situations. You know, Putin and the Russians kind of playing some games with us over this whole Snowden investigation. And we don't often see a track record. What you're saying is there's a pattern with some of these folks, particularly the Soviet Union, that goes back a long, long time. And the leadership in this country, going back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, has either been maybe not in collusion, but have not stood up or not fought the good fight that really has undermined a lot of our basic solidarities and our freedoms today. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is. That's a nice way of putting it. And I think that we can also see similar patterns domestically in terms of our debate over socialized medicine going on today. This, too, I mean, I'm talking about Obamacare, which is what we all have to call it, but really this is socialized medicine. And this, too, has a track record that goes back decades, and you can certainly see the roots of it in FDR's presidency, which of course began in the early 1930s. So we're talking about an 80-year arc here, these developments don't just.
But I want to stop here, Diana.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Diana, but make the tie to me because I agree with you that we had come a long way in giving health care to everyone, and that would be defined under socialized medicine. But on the other hand, if you ask the American people, you want to abolish Medicare, you want to, you know, why overwhelmingly? They would say absolutely no. So how do you relate the socialized medicine? It's crept up and gathered, say, going back to Roosevelt. How do you relate that to maybe some of our international compromises?
Well, I think that they are part and parcel in the sense that we have learned, we become conditioned not to identify our enemies. And what I discovered, really, when I set out to write American Betrayal, I was actually looking at our modern times, the past decade plus, in terms of how we've not been able to deal with Islam in any kind of a frank and factual, and I would say adult manner. And I was looking for precedent in our past, and here is where we start going back in time. I found tremendously striking parallels with our problems in dealing with communism, which would include our relations with the Soviet Union, obviously, but also domestically speaking, that track back to particularly the World War II period. So this is where you see commonality in terms of being unable to deal with ideological threats to our constitutional liberties.
Well, let me ask you this, and you and I could have this conversation for 3 hours. We got a couple of segments here on the show, but put yourself in the place of the United States back 30 years ago within the Middle East, because the Middle East is a massive problem that's going to consume us for years and years to come. I agree. Did we do the wrong thing? It seemed like we were pacifying dictators then, just to kind of you run your country internally, but kind of play along with us on international issues. How do you relate the history of the Middle East to the quagmire we've gotten ourselves in today?
Well, I think it goes back to not recognizing what an Islamic state is, what the Islamic culture is. And it's not enough for us to say, oh, well, we shouldn't ever deal with dictators because they're dictators. I mean, that's one statement that seems like a moral stand. And yet, what does that mean? Does that mean that we go change them, that we go change their country? Look at our fiascos in Iraq and Afghanistan. They are predicated on this notion that simply by invading the country, knocking off the terrible dictator or factions such as the Taliban in Afghanistan or Saddam Hussein in Iraq, that we can somehow magically transform these places into Western-style democracies. This absolutely denies the differences between a Western-style democracy based, you know, coming out of the Judeo-Christian tradition and Islamic culture, Islamic religion, Islamic law. Similarly, I think in the past, when we've been dealing with detente, peaceful coexistence, glasnost, perestroika, arms control, all the things we used to do with the Soviet Union, were always predicated on this notion that our system, Western-style liberty, a constitutional liberties and so on, were basically interchangeable with the communist system, that there was always this sense that we could accommodate them, that they would grow to be like us, just like that. I think the similar mistake is made in our dealings with the Islamic world. We are blind to the differences, whether we're looking at communism, whether we're looking at Islam. They are both collectivist totalitarian systems, even if one has a godhead and one does not. And we have a system that enshrines free conscience, free religion, free speech, the individual. They are directly at odds. Our system and Islam, our system and communism. And here's where you see commonalities. So I think we continue to be blind to these vast differences. And that, I do believe, is the source of all of our failures.
Well, I wonder, do we spend enough time on international issues? We've gone through this massive debate involving the national debt. Now the Obamacare is going to stay on the front burner for a long time because of the ineptitude of putting a simple computer system together. I say simple. I'm sure it's complicated. But you know, it doesn't take rocket science to put a computer program together for people to access. So that is going to be on the front burner. How do you relate the emphasis of our leaders? You wrote a book called Death of the Grown Up. You talked about the Bill Clintons and others in that book. And you basically are talking about the decline of adulthood. Can you relate that to our members of Congress? Is there a I'm looking out for my own reelection mentality, or how does that maturity affect the ties along that line?
Well, Very badly. I mean, I would say that it's very grown up of the Tea Party, of the House and Senate conservatives, to say, you know what, United States, we're sliding toward bankruptcy, and we are going to say no to Obamacare and hold this thing up so that we don't have to rubber stamp the president in this terrible, terrible rush to absolute disaster. That, to me, is grown up. What is not grown up is saying, oh, let's just lift the debt ceiling. Let's take the roof off and continue on apace. I mean, I think that you can sort of see, explain this in terms of grown up versus child here, and actually see that fiscal responsibility, which is essentially what the Ted Cruz Republicans are trying to stick up for here, in addition to trying to keep the country free and not come under the rubric of government control. I mean, 1/6 of our economy, of course, is health care. We really don't want the government controlling that, if we want to stay some sort of constitutional republic and not a social democracy. These are two very important points, one philosophical and political in terms of our nation, and one actually fiscal, as in we are going to blow up financially if we don't stop this crazy spending. So I would say that's a very grown-up approach. However, look how it's treated in the media, all the punditry, the establishment Republicans, etc. They're saying that it's temper tantrums to worry about such things. I think we've got it exactly backwards. And I would say that that is a real problem in terms of lack of maturity in the population at large.
The book is called American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. I found it fascinating. I wasn't anticipating the history that you wove through the book, going back, almost 100 years and bringing all this forward about how this is nothing new. There are patterns that challenge our national character. You can find the book on our website, by the way, at www.jimbrownusa.com. Diana, can you hang on for one more segment? I got a bunch of more questions to ask you. Can you hang on
just
a minute or two?
Thank you.
We're going to talk some more about American Betrayal here on the Common Sense Show. Again, my website, www.jimbrownusa.com. You can sign up for a list of who's on the show every week. You can read my new column. Lots of interesting things. So let me tell you what, we got one more good segment with Diana West coming on. Freshen up your coffee, and I'll be right back to make some common sense.
You're listening to Jim Brown's Common Sense, right here on the Genesis Communications Radio Network at GCNLive.com.
The most recognizable name in all of home improvement radio, the Cajun contractor Michael King, host of Home Talk USA, is now available for your next speaking engagement. That's right. You can have one of the most exciting, energetic personalities on the radio today speak at your next function. If your trade organization or company needs a qualified speaker to talk about home improvement products, technologies, and services, even the current state of your industry, please give him a call today. The Cajun contractor Michael King is a qualified, license-tested contractor with an extensive knowledge of home improvement construction and repairs, and is regarded by his peers as one of the top experts in his field and the home improvement industry in general. His keen sense of humor and entertaining delivery will really make your next function one to remember. Call the Cajun contractor Michael King today at 985-641-3730. That's 985-641-3730. 985-641-3730. Michael King at HometalkMedia.com. 985-641-3730. Michael King at HometalkMedia.com. C'est le bon temps roulé. Let the good times roll.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can! It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us.
jobs. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
I had tried everything. I'd cut back the amount of food I was eating. I was lifting weights and jogging, but nothing was working. My body was literally starving for minerals and trace elements as well as key vitamins. And as soon as I had that, I immediately could eat half of what I was eating previously and be satisfied. Now, there are hundreds of great products at InfoWarsTeam.com, but I want to point out the three that have helped me lose 37 pounds in just 2 months. Products like Beyond Tangy Tangerine, Pollen Burst, and Rebound. When I started taking the Tangy Tangerine and other products every day, I lost more than 37 pounds in just 2 months. Now that's results. I want to challenge my listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com and to order just three of their products, and you will see the changes in the way you look, feel, and in your appetite almost immediately. Start your journey to health and wellness today. InfoWarsTeam.com.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Jim Brown's Common Sense. Now, here's your host and professor of thinkology, Jim Brown.
Hey, we're talking to Diana West. Got a great new book out called American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. And I read a line of a review of her book where, in dealing with defining the nation's character, one particular reviewer said, we cannot defend our identity if we have no clue about who we were and who we should be. Diane, I'd like to ask you this. When you talk so much about our nation's character, I mean, how do we define ourselves? What sets us apart? What makes us different? What makes us exceptional when we talk about the Russians and the Cold War, as you so eloquently laid out in the book, or if we talk about Islam today in the Middle East? What is unique about the American character that makes us have to take a little bit more drastic action, stand, draw the lines in the dirt, and not be so coddling as you have portrayed us in being in your book?
I think what sets us apart is the providence of having been born in a country with an absolutely stunningly beautiful set of founding documents that gives us the ability to live with greater freedom and liberty than any people in history. We have gotten so far away from, though, those very simple founding principles, and I think that this is kind of why we're off in the wilderness. We've gotten away from an understanding of what our system is based on. For example, checks and balances. I don't think school children today are taught about the co-equal branches of government. I don't think our legislators understand that Congress is the equal of the president. And I think that's what we see with this shutdown, the complete misunderstanding of what the shutdown was about. But when you look at freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of conscience that is enshrined in our founding documents to constrain the government, to allow people to live as free citizens, this is unique in human history, and no other country has duplicated it. But we have gone very far from it, and we do not value this legacy. And that, I think, is the basis of our problems. It's almost as if we have had a revolution without having actually rewritten the words of the Constitution, but we certainly don't live by them at this time.
Well, you raised the question about those freedoms that are guaranteed in the Constitution, that often there are some compromises. What's your thoughts on this NSA, this National Security Agency, collecting contacts from millions and millions of people, our phone logs, our emails, all going into a database that so far, although, you know, I saw there was a story in the New York Times a couple of days, maybe the Wall Street Journal, how Senator Feinstein from California said that if we'd have had this database in operation, that 9/11 would have never happened. And, of course, now some independent observers say that's hogwash, that we got all this data, but we don't really put it to use very effectively. How do you see, in defining the freedoms we need, the actions of, say, the NSA today?
Well, I think it's a perversion of those freedoms. I think that it is absolutely unconstitutional to permit a superstructure, a black superstructure, as in black as in secret, superstructure of the government that is just not subject to oversight, that has no constraints on it, that is not transparent in any way, to arise. I mean, that is really what we're looking at, an overwhelming Stasi-like state. I'm referring to, you know, the Secret Service of East Germany. When you actually read about it and pretend that you're not, you know, you don't have kind of a red, white, and blue lens to look at it from, and you just look at what this is saying about what our government is doing to us, this does not sound American to me, and it certainly doesn't sound constitutional. And when you actually take a step back and realize Congress wouldn't know about this had not Edward Snowden absconded with this information and left the country and gone off, you know, God knows where, it's an astonishing thing, and I feel like it has not really resonated with our leaders, with the people, and that is something I hope we do see more attention paid to. This is frightening to me. And then you have to always pair it with the flip side, which is, meanwhile, in Washington, it is essentially practically illegal to consider Islam, jihad, caliphate, terrorism, and so on as motivations for the kinds of terror, the kinds of violence, the kinds of insurrection that the government is supposedly trying to protect us from. So while you've stripped away the language of Islam, the ideological battle language, the enemy threat doctrine, to use Pentagon parlance, from government deliberations, then they enlarge the haystack they keep talking about to include all of us as suspects. It's madness, but it's also frightening to me. And then meanwhile, what do we have? A few months ago, we had that atrocity in Boston. With all of this in place, they didn't notice that they had some jihadists going to Chechnya and coming back into the country and then utterly, you know, destroying the sanctity of Boston in that marathon day.
With the Russians calling us on two different occasions saying, hey, we're kind of concerned about these guys. You better look out for them. They're pretty bad characters. So all of this data gathering didn't touch any of that, and that was the point I'm making. Well, then let me ask you this now. Now, I'm trying to find some consistency here because let's go back to, say, George Bush. Bush says, okay, we got to go into Iraq. We got to go into Afghanistan. We've got to be very proactive, as the neocons want us to be throughout the world, to assert American freedoms, American interests, American values. You got the Coca-Colas of the world saying you better go out there and protect all these other countries and get involved because that's where we sell all our Coca. You know, 90% of Cokes are sold throughout the rest of the world. So you got this massive pressure to get involved a lot more, but versus and costing us a huge sum of money versus pulling in our horns and being less proactive. So in trying to stay consistent with our national character, how far do we get involved in these international confrontations?
Well, in my opinion,
not like I'm. You know, that's a real softball for you. That's a tough question.
Well,
I agree, but
yes and no. I mean, I think that we've become we expect to be. I think that it's a very common belief that America has to be, must be, is the world's policeman. And I used to have that feeling. I used to feel like it was a very important thing to stand up for democracy, quote, anywhere in the world. I suppose, you know, coming into my adulthood, certainly, it seemed like a reasonable and indeed a piece of our national security to do so. I no longer believe that. Over this past decade, I have come very far away from that point of view. I believe we've lost sight of our American interest, of what this nation really is. We don't have a border anymore, right? I mean, our Senate over the summer couldn't even muster the votes to protect our border. I mean, it's shocking. But this is what happens when you become internationalized. And then getting back to the very beginning of our conversation, I don't think it's an accident that communism was a world movement, a global movement. Who started the United Nations, which has so much influence on our behaviors now? Well, it was a communist agent named Alger Hiss, was the acting secretary general, someone who fostered it in the deliberative period. There were other agents involved in this. I mean, when you see how this actually matches up with a notion of international government, which again is a very Soviet Union notion, a very communistic notion, these things, these patterns are parts of trends that history has unleashed and that we have been unable to pull back, retard, step away from. I mean, we have the United Nations in New York City, of course. But I mean, I feel like we do not know what an American national interest is. I don't believe we can police the world because we can't change the world. I don't think we want to go be, say, missionaries of God or democracy elsewhere in the world. We're not very good at micromanaging foreign countries. We don't have the manpower or the resources to do these indefinite occupations. So I think that it's time for America to, yes, look to our borders, look to our home, look to our liberties. How can we protect them? How can we unite with friendly nations who share our ideas about freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, freedom of speech? This would be our European cousins, Israel, perhaps India, you know, some of these countries fighting jihad, Thailand, and so on. There are people, countries and peoples we have commonalities with. But in terms of trying to partner with the world to sell Coca-Cola, I don't, and to die for it, because we have to remember, this isn't just about money. In our age, we have, you know, watching Afghanistan and Iraq, of course, we have actual blood paying for this. It's not helping us. And meanwhile, given immigration levels, record low immigration, illegal immigration levels, whether it's Hispanic language, Hispanic culture, or Islamic, bringing vectors of Sharia into this country, we are not protecting what we have here. And I think that this is an absolute tragedy in the making.
Well, yeah, and by the way,
I threw a lot out there.
No, you did. You did. Yeah, and actually, you give a good balanced view. You're not really a diehard Republican, or, you know, you look like you're more libertarian and more, you're just raising good questions. And I think you've done a great job. You're a great writer, too. Let me tell our listeners, the book is The American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Dinah West is a great writer, good book. You can find it on our website at www.jimbrownusa.com. Dinah, I'm out of time. Have a good weekend. Hope we can talk to you again soon.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Our show's come to an end, folks, way too soon. Wish we had several more hours. Check our website at jimbrownusa.com. Hey, you have a great weekend. Take care. See you back same time right here on the Common Sense Show.
You're listening to Jim Brown's Common Sense right here on the Genesis Communications Radio Network at gcnlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
These days, so many suffer from heartburn, stomach ulcers, and acid reflux, and most never realize it is the high acidity within the body that causes their discomfort. While selective diet choices can help, AlkaVision Plasma pH drops can really make a change. A few drops added to water can optimize your body's pH level, ridding you of harmful waste and acid, promoting health, and restoring vibrance and energy. Healthy pH levels make all the difference. High acidity can also cause depression, insomnia, and irritability.
AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops bring you vital balance that can be truly life-changing. Alkalizing boosts immune response, reduces headaches and cramping, and even helps prevent bone loss. This is simple science that helps your body do what's natural. Order your AlkaVision pH Drops for just $29.95 at AlkaVision.com, AlkaVision.com, or call 800-518-7615. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.